Hello and welcome to episode number 4 of the Locker Room Files podcast. I'm Claire Louise Vermonde, your LRF podcast host. Thank you for joining me for my latest interview, and I hope you're all having an amazing start to your week. I'm dodging swimming practice tonight to bring you this episode, so I'm not sure that I'm off to the best start, but we can only go up from here. If you'd like to stay up to date with my latest episodes, you can follow me on Instagram at thenewfarmgirl or at locker_room_files, or you can head to my blog www.lockerroomfiles.com.au and hit the subscribe button from there. Now on to today's episode. I grew up in a country town called Barrel in the New South Wales Southern Highlands, tucked in between Sydney and Canberra. The Southern Highlands has a proud sporting history. Most notably, Barrel was home to the late, great Sir Donald Bradman. And the greater area has seen a host of other sports stars call it home over the years, including Tony Plugger Lockett, Nathan Hindmarsh, and our recent hometown success at this year's Tour de France, Caleb Ewan. So it was a great privilege to be able to catch up with another up-and-coming athlete from home, cyclocross rider Nicholas Smith. Nick gave me such a great insight into a sport that I was very unfamiliar with and was kind enough to invite me to watch him race when he was in Brisbane a week ago. If you have a chance to go and watch a cyclocross race, I really do encourage you to do it. It's an action-packed sport that's free to watch and very spectator-friendly. Nick is such a great ambassador for his sport. His excitement for cyclocross was infectious. I think a trip to Europe to see the full spectacle in all its glory is now in order. In the meantime, though, here is my interview with Nick. I hope you enjoy. Okay, well, welcome to the podcast, first of all. And I thought we'd just start. So I don't know a lot about cyclocross. So maybe if you can just give me like an insight into what cyclocross actually is.
Yeah, sure. It's usually held around a course that's about 2.5 to 3.5 Ks. That's the lap. And we race for 1 hour. And the races are dictated by an hour. So whether you do 5 laps or 12 laps in that hour, it's time-based. And the courses are like via the UCI, which is the International Federation. The courses need to be 3 meters wide at all times. And you've got Throughout that lap, you'll have like a section of asphalt and then a section of off-road and sections where you'll need to hop off your bike and carry it, say, up a staircase or over some barriers, which is an interesting feature. I guess that's kind of distinctive for cyclocross. What else have we got? Depending on where you are, you might be racing through. They might have a sand pit in the course or snow or grass or whatever, yeah.
So during those laps, so it's 3 meters wide. Is that designed to ensure that people can overtake and things?
Sorry, yeah, I think so. Because you see a lot in, say, a mountain bike race. Once you get into that single track, it's really hard to overtake. Yeah, I think that three meter rule allows people to overtake. Yeah.
Does it have a big spectator base as well?
Not so much here. It's pretty small here, which is not so many people know about it, but once you head up into the Northern Hemisphere, and if you ever get to Europe, it's huge.
Like, really?
You'll go to races and there'll be 50, 60,000 people watching.
So what's that like?
Oh, incredible. Yeah. The atmosphere of 60,000 people on the side of the course it's incredible. Incredible.
So I had heard that it can be like sort of quite the sort of almost like a festival vibe.
Yeah, I'd say so. I guess it kind of depends on where you are.
Yes.
But for sure, like over in Europe, you'll see sort of like beer tents that are, I don't know how big they are, but they'd fit a couple hundred people in there and there's music blaring and everyone's drinking beer and it's like a euro cup over there at a race, and it is a bit of a festival. Yeah, everyone's just going nuts, but it's great. Like, atmosphere is really incredible.
So what is the racing in Europe? Is it a series based thing, or are they all separate standalone events?
They do run a few series over there. Sort of that's where like most of the people are making a living, so it's hard to like You see it with road cycling as well in Australia. Sort of any professional road cyclist is living in Europe or spending sort of more than half the year in Europe. Yeah, but they have a few series, like some big series, obviously the World Cup series, and then that culminates at the end of the season
Okay.
with the World Championships. And you've got the Super Prestige, which has been a long-running series that's predominantly held in Belgium. They have a few races in the Netherlands and or around Belgium, but and then they've got another series. I'm not sure, it changes names all the time. I think we're up to maybe GVA Trophy or something. Yeah, but it's all sort of in Belgium.
So when you go to Europe, how long are you spending there throughout the year?
The longest I've spent, I think, is 60 days. So not over there for a huge amount of time, but I think that's like it's dictated by your funds. Because at the
Yeah.
moment, there's not really a lot of, well, there, yeah, the support, it's definitely increasing, but if you want to go over there, you need to do it off your own back. So sort of provides a few, makes it a bit difficult, you know.
So how are you doing it? So you will go and race over there for during those 60 days, and then what are you doing for the rest of the year? I know that you'd be competing in Australia as well, but so you're working?
So I've been at uni in Wollongong for the past 4 years, just doing part time, so that I can sort of, well, it makes race weekends a little bit easier. And then you've got that massive summer holidays. It's like 3 months, so it works out pretty well if you wanted to go to Europe. Yeah, and then I'm just working. I have two part time jobs. That's not, I don't earn enough to sort of live by myself, but it just keeps things ticking over.
So it's sort of a labor of love in a way.
A little bit, yeah. You find out why you do it, I think.
Oh, and what are you studying at uni?
I'm studying sport and movement science. Yeah, I think coaching, really interests me, and the core subjects in that degree are sort of anatomy and physiology based, which I find really interesting.
Oh, great. You must be able to apply what you learn at uni into your racing as well, which would be very handy.
Yeah, there has been a few crossovers, which is interesting. I think I haven't done a lot of nutrition work at uni, but that's definitely an interest, and you sort of see, well, that's you there's like day-to-day crossovers with that one. Yeah, we've done a done we did a biomechanics subject, which was really interesting, but that was a bit hard to sort of draw links to cyclocross. They sort of, I guess it's fairly basic, and you're talking about like limb length, and but still, yeah, still interesting.
So with the nutrition, how are you preparing for races nutritionally? And when does it start? Like how far out are you looking, or is it just all the time?
Well, it's changed a bit for me, I think, over the years. Like I started when I was sort of 15, and it was just eating how I normally did, going through school and whatever. And then sort of my mum's been helping me quite a bit, and she did quite a bit of research early on about what would be best, because you hear all the time about like carbs, 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 and
Yep.
pasta before your meals and all this, sorry, before your races and everything. But mum ended up finding, well, she, I don't know, she got really into protein. So we were sort of looking at high protein based food. So we used to do like a creamed rice kind of thing before the race. That was sort
Okay.
of like an hour before the race. And then we always used to just do meat and veggies, like as a dinner kind of thing, rather than chukkers of pasta or rice. And that worked pretty well. Over time, that sort of changed. But now I sort of try and have a meal about 3 hours or 2 hours before the race. And that would just be like rice, maybe a bit of rocket or egg, tinned fish sort of thing. And then after the race, I'm a fan of chocolate milk, so I have that after the race.
I love
Love a
it.
bit of chocolate. Dark chocolate, I
Oh,
have all the time. Too much of
never,
it.
you can never have too much. And so tell me about training for cyclocross. What's involved in that for you?
Not a whole heap of volume compared to, say, a road cyclist.
Sure.
You're still trying to maintain a fair bit of load, but for me, with just going week to week, it would vary probably between 10 to 15 hours a week. And within that, or it's changing throughout the season, like whether you're doing sort of intensity or just base work. You also try to fit in a bit of running as well, just because with the courses, like obviously every course is different, but you might have 100 meters of running every lap, and you might do 7 laps. And then I really find, like, Like I don't have a lot of upper body, but I really find doing some strength work or some gym stuff really useful as well. Especially because in Australia or and Europe, you're often racing Saturday and the Sunday. So I think it helps, like if you have a really hard race on the Saturday, if you've got a bit more strength, then you're not feeling quite so bad to race on the Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you do like on the Saturday night then to recover from that race and prepare for the next one?
Well, usually I'll do like 20 minutes on the rollers once I get back to accommodation or anything. Rollers as in like a trainer, like a stationary kind of thing.
Sure.
So just pedaling really easy. And then just legs up. I sort of sit on the ground, like my back on the ground, and put my legs up on a wall. Do that for, I don't know, maybe a couple blocks of 15 minutes. Just trying to eat well. That's kind of my standard thing. I know other people do different things, or they wear those funny boots on their legs, but
So with the legs up, I'm assuming that that's to do with blood flow and
yeah.
what exactly is that doing for you?
Well, I don't know exactly,
Sure.
but yeah, just blood flow. I feel otherwise, like your legs will feel really heavy. So I
Okay.
think if you put your legs up, maybe you're getting all that lactic acid out of your body. But I don't know. Maybe it's just something in my head. Not
Hey,
everybody does it.
if it works.
Yeah.
And so how, when you're over there, how many races are you doing?
In Europe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess depending on how long you're over there, but I think I've probably the longest time I've been over there, I would have done 15 races. It's called cursed period, so Christmas period.
Yep.
And you race, if you do every race, I think you can race in December, roughly, the dates change, but say 23rd, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, 31
Oh.
in the first, if you do everything.
Have you done that?
Not everything. I think I may have done maybe say 23rd, 26th, 28th, 31 and first,
Wow.
which is pretty intense. But they've got racing. Like you could probably find a race, probably find three races a week if you went looking.
How do you prepare for that mentally?
It can be pretty hard. I found it's been pretty hard, especially going over to Europe when you're younger and you're not you might be You might be sort of at the top level in Australia, and you head to Europe and you're not at the top level. It can be pretty hard. So I've done like talking with a few people and trying to really focus on your own goals and just concentrating on ticking boxes for you during the races. So then you can at least sort of evaluate your performance based on that rather than where you finish. Because like, yeah, I haven't really had any big results over there, but like I finished 30th in a World Cup, in two World Cups last season I was over there, and that was sort of like a really big result for me.
Wow, that's awesome.
But yeah, like it's hard when I think most Australians go over there, they're not you might yeah you might be finishing 30th. I don't know that anyone's done too much better than that in a World Cup or anything like that.
Yeah, so it's an adjustment going from being the top of your field in Australia and then going to Europe, and there's just like so many more athletes over there. Yeah, like there's more people in front of you, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. There's more athletes for a start, and the level's just really high. So I think it's an adjustment for sure in your mindset, just to learn not to judge your performances based on where like the position you finish.
So, what do you count as your greatest achievement in the sport?
That's a good question. I think like over time, like I've been to five world championships, and I think that's something that sticks with me, sort of thing. But in terms of one race, probably the world champs in 2018.
Yeah.
That was in the Netherlands, and I finished 40th then. Which again, like it's not a super result or anything, but I had a really good day, and I think I did. Like it was just one of those days where you did everything right.
Oh, that's
So
so
I
good.
think just being able to walk away from that and go, like I was happy with that. Like I wouldn't change anything.
How much of it is down to luck? Are there many crashes in cyclocross?
Yeah, there's often a few Yeah, there's a lot of crashes, really.
Yeah, okay.
Especially in Europe, because the courses are so technical. Like the first time I got over there, and it's like, you really expect us to ride down this?
Really?
It's really daunting.
Oh, wow.
So there are a few crashes, but it's a little bit slower. The like cyclocross racing, sort of depending on the course, you may be averaging around 20 k's an hour. So it's not super fast, and often it's really wet and muddy. So if you come off, there's not a whole lot of risk involved. So
Okay.
often you'll see the leaders might have a little crash every now and then, and there's no big consequences, except maybe you've lost a handful of seconds that you need to make up.
It sounds like a whole heap of fun. I'm gonna have to get out there and have a look.
It is a lot of fun. There's the national rounds are coming up to Brisbane next weekend.
Oh, okay, I'm
If
there.
you're close.
Yeah, I'll come and have a look for sure.
Yep, racing up there next weekend, which will be good because it's been so cold at home.
Oh, hopefully it stays that way.
Just some sun as well. I think that
Yeah.
helps.
And so tell me about racing in Australia. I am assuming, based off what you've just said, that it is vastly different to Europe, atmosphere wise. But what is it like being able to race in your home country?
It is vastly different to Europe, and it's been changing quite a bit. It's a really new sport in Australia. So I think we had our first national championships in 2013, I think. And yep, so the atmosphere is a lot different because it is so much smaller. So you haven't got crowds anywhere near the size of Europe, but it's definitely growing. And in terms of atmosphere, yeah, I think it's still like fun sort of thing, like it is in Europe. It's just a little bit smaller, but this is good also because you know just about everyone at a race weekend, which is cool, and you can sort of heckle each other,
Yeah.
which is fun. But yeah, the racing's, yeah, it's really different. Like the courses we have here, often there's not as much elevation change per lap as there would be in Europe. So
Okay.
the racing is a lot faster. You may average up to 30 k's an hour in a race rather than say 20. And then it's a lot drier here too. So like we'll still have the odd muddy race. Yeah, often it's a bit drier, so the racing sort of promotes like bigger bunches sort of thing rather than riding by yourself.
Oh, that would be exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, yeah.
So, which do you prefer between, I guess just talking about the track, not so much the atmosphere, but do you prefer going faster or do you prefer the more technical courses?
For me, I think I probably prefer the more technical courses. So if I was going to pick one, yeah, probably Europe. Yeah, it's sort of next level. But there are positives and negatives with both of them.
And how did you get into the sport? So, I know. I mean, we grew up in the same area and I didn't do cycling, but obviously through dad, I know a lot about cycling in the area and I didn't know that that was something that you could do. So how did you find your way into the sport?
Well, the same as you, like you grew up and I was sort of playing cricket a bit and soccer and the standard sort of thing you do when you're young. And then, yeah, sort of not sure how it happened really, but I sort of was getting into road cycling. That was sort of from 2009, 2010, 2011, when Cadel won the tour, just seeing it on the TV a bit and going, oh, this would be cool. And it was a fitness thing, I think, as well. For me, and then we were sort of like my mum and I were sort of wondering, well, how are we going to do this? And we were a bit naive and sort of thought, oh, the roads around here are a bit, how are you going? And there's some dirt roads and whatever. So we thought, well, maybe we need something a bit more durable, like with some wider tires or some tread on the tires, that kind of thing. Still looking at road cycling. And then what we ended up buying was a cyclocross bike. Had no idea. And then I was racing in the club on a cyclocross bike, just in D grade, the bottom grade. And then, yeah, sort of once we sort of did a bit more racing, we found cyclocross was its own discipline. And then we headed up to Terrey Hills, I think, in 2013, just where's that sort of west of Sydney,
Yes, yep.
northwest of Sydney, which is a local race. That's like the closest race we have, which is a little bit annoying. Yeah, so we went up there and did that, and it was, yeah, had so much fun. Like, obviously the scene was really small, but everyone was just having a good time. It wasn't serious, and we had a bit of like we had this running in the course, which was something new, and then yeah, it went pretty quickly from there. Like we went down to Melbourne for the national champs that year, and then in 2014 I was in the Netherlands race in the world champs.
So how, like, what was that like, just sort of catapulting yourself into a new sport that, you know, a couple of years ago you didn't know anything about, and then finding yourself at the world champs in the Netherlands?
Yeah, it was really fast. I think I found out just how generous people can be. Sort of we came in, yeah, having no idea, as you said, and there were so many people willing to help and sort of point us in the right direction and give me opportunities to go and, yeah, just experience more and more of the racing. That's probably what I got out of that the most, was just how generous people were.
In what way? Can you elaborate on that?
Just showing us, say the bike set up before the race, learning that if you drop your tyre pressures, then you'll get a bit more grip in the mud or in any soft conditions. So just learning about the race. And then later on, before Europe, there was a guy in Melbourne who we got into contact with, and he had a family, or he is from Belgium, so his family still lived in Belgium. And I ended up traveling with him to Belgium. I didn't know the guy at all. We met him at the airport.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously been on the phone and everything, trying to work things out. That was where you can imagine everything involved in that. And I didn't, yeah, we didn't, hadn't even met the guy before. Yeah, so he took me to Europe. It was just me, like mum didn't come or anyone else from my family. And I stayed with him and his family while I was over there, and obviously learned a lot from that. Like, and him sort of, we'd go and ride the courses before the race and everything.
So how old were you?
16.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, what an adventure though.
Yeah, for sure. I probably, yeah, was naive, so I wasn't
thinking
about everything.
Yes.
Others would be now, but.
I'm sure your mum was doing the worrying for you.
Yeah, for sure. It's, yeah, pretty, when you look back on that and go, what was I doing at 16?
Did your mum get to go over to Europe to watch you race at all?
She's been once, which is good.
Yeah.
Just to be able to go over and do it once. Obviously, it's pretty hard because you've got to do things yourself. At least you can sort of tick that box.
Absolutely. And it would be really hard being over Christmas.
The first time we went, I was, I think I only left mid January and was back in February, because every time I've been over, we do the World Champs as well.
Okay.
Which is sort of end of January or early February.
You have to be selected to do the World Champs.
You do, but it's been obviously, like, the scene's really small, so often if you just put your hand up, then you can go.
Wow. Okay.
It's sort of like they have a criteria and everything.
Sure.
What am I saying? There's a few people that sort of haven't met the criteria that have still gone. You just put your hand up, and whether they select you or not. But this, I guess, this is because you're doing it yourself, sort of thing. So it's not really like that. There's no investment. So.
Yeah, okay.
From the Federation sort of thing. I don't know if I'm being clear, sorry.
No, absolutely. I totally understand what you're saying. And
it's probably changing a bit more now. Like,
so is in Australia, is it governed by Cycling Australia?
I think it was in maybe its first 2 years, and then it's changed to Mountain Bike Australia. And I'm not sure what's going to happen down the track, but at the moment it's with Mountain Bike Australia. And they're definitely, like, there's more happening. With the like just promotion of the sport and then development within the sport. Like, there's a few camps that MTBA run now for the junior riders. So I think, say, from 13 years old to 18 that they run, and they have a manager over there and a coach that sort of help everyone to learn about specifics in the sport. And they send a manager overseas now with the team. So it's definitely growing, and there's a bit more support and organisation and things. At the start, it was pretty much you do things by yourself and you get yourself over there. And then obviously for World Cups and World Champs, you need to, like, the Federation need to enter you and things. But apart from that, like if you wanted to race any of the other series over there, you could just go and do it.
So now when you go over, you're going in a team.
Yeah, of sorts. Yep.
Okay.
So it's still, you still have quite a bit of input yourself. So whether you want to stay over there for 3 months, 2 months, or 2 weeks. But often, like the last few years, they've had a manager come over sort of the early January and then coordinate the team from there.
How has
So
that
we
helped
have,
you?
I think it helps as a junior. So that's like under 19 category. So you're looking at, yeah, guys that are maybe 16, 17, 18. So if you've got an adult with you at that time, it can make a big difference. Because I think, like often you've probably never shopped before, you've never washed your own clothes. It's like there's a lot to learn. So if you have someone that can yeah, maybe even just go to the shops with you, or help you cook your meals for dinner, or
Yeah.
drive even. So
Oh, that's true.
yeah, so I think its benefits are more directed at the younger people, but it certainly helps too. Like over a World Cup weekend, you'll have a manager's meeting where all your numbers are picked up, and you sort of select your pit or pit box in the race, and there's a few sort of official things that you would need someone for to help you.
So,
Yep.
what is so sorry. What's the pit box in the race?
I should have mentioned that when you asked me
No.
what cyclocross was. So within that lap, you'll have two sections of the course where there are pits. So, and that's just the same as like in motorsport. The course, you'll come to the course, and there'll be an option where you can go into the pits or continue on the course. And so into the pits, you'd have two mechanics per rider, and they'll have, like, depending on your budget, you might have 16 spare wheels or just one set of spare wheels or whatever. But they might have spare wheels and a pump and maybe some tools and a spare bike. So everyone has a spare bike sort of thing in Europe. Not so much here in Australia, because it's not often that you'd need it, but you would have a spare bike. So your mechanics would hold onto your bike in the pits. And for whatever reason, if you need to change your bike, then you would come into the pits and then hop off your bike, hand it to one mechanic, and then grab your spare bike from the other mechanic and get on that, and then continue for the race. You'd be changing, say, yeah, if you got a flat tire or if something broke. But
Okay.
also just with the conditions over there, like and how wet it is, there's often a lot of mud.
Yes.
And this can sort of clog up your bike a bit. And it might not mean that your shifting is bad or anything, but if your tires are full of mud, then it can become quite hard to turn. Or maybe by the end of a section, you're carrying 2 kilos of mud with you because it's
Oh,
stuck to your
wow.
bike. So you could switch bikes, and then once you yeah and then sort of your mechanics could go and clean off the bike that you've just handed to them, and then be ready to switch again half a lap later or a lap later.
Does it become tactical in that sense, or is it just basically you have to go into the pits when you have to?
Probably a little bit of both. Maybe
Okay.
depends on where you are in the field. So say at the front of the race, that could provide a point for an attack. If you're late in the race, maybe, and someone has gone into the pits, because often it's a little bit slower because you've got to get off and swap bikes. So you're going to lose a handful of seconds. So maybe, yeah, it's definitely an option where you could distance a rival or something.
Oh, it just sounds so cool.
It is pretty interesting. I think if it was a bit bigger here, I think a lot more, like, people would find it pretty interesting, maybe even more than just watching people go round and round on the track. Or you've got a few more things to look at, and often with the way the courses are, you could stand in one section at the venue and see just about all the course, rather than sort of standing on a section of road and seeing whoever you're with, a child or a partner, for 10 seconds before they're gone again.
Exactly. It's so
Yeah.
funny. I was watching the Tour de France last night with a friend, and we were like, "Isn't it weird how you probably are standing in that one spot for a few hours waiting for the race to come past, and then you see it for 30 seconds, and that's it?" And we were both like, "Yeah, but I really want to go and do that."
Yeah.
It still has the appeal, but then you know, this sport, and you can watch the entire thing unfold in front of your eyes. That's just so cool. So what are your goals for the sport?
I haven't won a national championships. That's something that I'd like to do, but it's like changing as you go through the junior or through your age categories. So that's something I haven't done that yet. That'd be something I'd like to do, to wear the jersey sort of thing. I think just like this year, I've had a good year so far, and I've made it to sort of that front group in the races, which I haven't, yeah, hasn't happened before now. So that's something I've been working towards for a few years. And that's good to see that sort of finally coming to fruition and being able to ride at the front of the races. But yeah, I think I've, like, because I've had such opportunities early, or like I've only been riding for sort of 6 years, and I've already been able to go all over the country and the world. There's a few things that have been ticked off, but I think then the national championships is, yeah, a bit special, and then you can wear the jersey and you've got that green and gold tip on your jersey from then on.
So when is nationals in Australia?
In our winter. So
okay.
For the past few years, it's sort of been early August. So this year, I think it's the 10th of August, if that's a Saturday, I think. So we're only 4 weeks away this year.
Okay. So how's your preparation going for that?
Yeah, good this year. It's a bit different once you sort of come back from Europe and you sort of want to have a bit of a break before you start getting into the season again in Australia. Sort of you come back from, well, the season sort of ends in Europe sort of February, and then our season in Australia runs from about May until the end of August. Yeah, come into our season and you sort of want to be good in June. That's sort of when the national series starts, and then the national championships are often, yeah, early August.
So I'm up to the last question, and it is the question that I ask everyone. Can you tell me who your idols are? And doesn't have to be from sport, or you can choose one from sport and someone else if you wanted.
A little bit left of field, but Craig Lowndes.
Yeah, cool.
I think he's, I just remember like sort of him, watching him at Bathurst every year, sort of stands out. But I think just to someone who could, he just had so much energy around him. I think, and you could always sort of feel that, not necessarily at Bathurst, but often at Bathurst in the dead, it's sort of in that final part of the race.
Yes.
He's just had so much energy, and I think was able to just be in the right place at the right time. Like he would, in those moments that mattered, he sort of wasn't often making mistakes. And I think that's something to just strive towards. And also you just, like, I think if anyone sort of pictures him, he's always got a smile on his face sort of thing. Something to strive towards, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, Nick, you've done an excellent job for your first ever podcast interview. And I'm going to come watch next weekend.
Yeah, that'd be super. It's on both days, but even just one day. Yeah.
Okay. That'd yeah, for sure. Well, we'll definitely do that.
It is a lot of fun though. Hopefully you'll see it hopefully next weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even across, like, it's, they've got their like elite grades, but all the masters as well. And like you see some pretty funny, or just people having a lot of fun in those races, like wearing.
Oh, really?
Stuff and just sort of laughing with each other on the track.
Oh, that's cool.
It's good, like, because often you'll, like, because it's labelled as a national round sort of thing, and people
okay.
get all serious and whatever, but it's good to see that you sort of have people that are still just about having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Nick. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I did talking to him. Next up, I have my training partner, personal friend, and age group triathlete, Jamie Simmons, talking about his lead up to the ITU World Championships next month. After Jamie, I'll be bringing you my interview with multiple Paralympic gold medalist and world champion swimmer, Brendan Hall. Brendan is such a positive and spirited athlete, and I had such a fun chat with him. I look forward to having you join me then.